We are continuing our fifth week through the Gospel of Mark. We're in our fifth Sunday through the Gospel of Mark. Looking into the future, I'll be preaching through Mark, continuing through February. And then into March, we're going to take a little time out from Mark. I'm going to take some sermons, some topical sermons. And then it'll be Lent. And then it'll be Palm Sunday. And then it'll be Holy Week. And then it'll be Easter. I'm quite sure we just celebrated Christmas. Let's turn to our text this morning, and I'll go rather quickly, or as quick as I can. Verse 1, another time Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Remember, Jesus was a sort of traveling rabbi. As many synagogues didn't have a full-time rabbi, they would welcome in traveling rabbis on the Sabbath to talk about the scriptures, to give talks, you know, to give teachings. And so Jesus is there in the synagogue in Capernaum, and there's no rabbi present, so they let him come and give a talk. And so Jesus comes into the synagogue, and we're told by Mark that there in the synagogue is a man with a shriveled hand. Some of the older translations say, a crippled hand. His hand is shriveled in. We're not told his name. We're not told why his hand is shriveled. We're not told his age. We just know that they're in the synagogue. Jesus is there, and there's a man with a crippled hand, a shriveled hand. Verse 2, some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. Already, when Mark talks about they, he's talking about the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, the religious leaders who had turned against Jesus. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law, also the Sadducees, they were always trying to trap Jesus. They were always trying to expose Jesus. They were, of course, jealous of his popularity. They were jealous of the miracles that happened in his ministry and the authority that was found in his teachings. They valued, that is the Pharisees and the scribes, the teachers of the law, they valued their status in the community and their opportunity for personal gain so much that they lost sight of their goal as religious leaders, which of course was to point people to God. These scribes and Pharisees, these teachers of the law, were so concerned about their own personal gain, their own position in society, that they put aside what was their true calling, which was to point people to God. They were more concerned about power and wealth. Out of all the people in first century Palestine, these Pharisees and the teachers of the law should have recognized Jesus for who he truly was. But because their desire for power, their desire for wealth and status blinded them, even though the Messiah, who they were waiting for 2,000 years, was right in front of them, they could not see him. They wanted power, they wanted wealth, they wanted status. They did not want Jesus. Please notice with me why the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were watching Jesus closely. They wanted a reason to accuse him. They weren't there for the bettering of their souls. They weren't there for, you know, religious instruction. They were there to criticize. They were there to be critics. They were there to nitpick, to find fault in Jesus. I don't have to remind you, if you want to hear the sermons, they're online on our Facebook page, if you have Facebook. But we looked at it. Whenever these Pharisees and these teachers of the law were around Jesus, they were not there to learn from Jesus. They were not there to better their understanding of God. They just wanted to complain. They just wanted to critique. They just wanted to nitpick. That's not the attitude that we should have. We don't want to be like the Pharisees. We want to be like Jesus. Verse 3, Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Many times in the Gospels, when Jesus does a miracle or healing, he didn't do it in a way that brought attention to himself. This time, though, he has the man with the crippled hand, the shriveled hand, stand in front of everyone in the synagogue. Last week, we learned in our study of Mark that Jesus said that he is the Lord of the Sabbath. We talked about having a Sabbath rest, how important it is to rest and pray and have quiet time with God. Jesus here is exercising his authority as the Lord of Sabbath. Verse 4, then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or evil, to save a life or to kill?" But they remained silent. Being the good rabbi that he was, Jesus asked his audience a question. What's right to do on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save a life or to kill? In other words, Jesus is asking the folks there in the synagogue, which is better, to preserve a life by healing or to destroy a life by refusing to heal? This is the ironic thing about Jesus asking this question, because here he is ready to heal this man with a withered hand. He's ready to heal him. And on the other hand, there are these Pharisees, the teachers of the law, and they're plotting to kill Jesus. So by asking this question to them, he's kind of exposing them. They were trying to set a trap for him, and he kind of turned it on them. Jesus did this all throughout the Gospels. Verses 5 and 6, he looked around at them in anger, deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Jesus was so angry at the Pharisees for their uncaring attitudes. Jesus shows us here, this is something that really was a blessing to me. Jesus shows us here that anger in itself is not wrong. It's not a sin to be angry. Jesus was very much correct for being angry at the Pharisees because of their pride and ego. And in his righteous anger, Jesus looks at the man with the shriveled hand, the crippled hand, and he tells him to stretch it out. The man, without question, stretches it out, and it was completely restored. And instead of praising God and rejoicing over this mighty miracle, the Pharisees get upset. They're even more angry with Jesus than they were before. And so they go and they meet with this group of folks called the Herodians. The Herodians were a leading political party of the day. And they started to plot how they would kill Jesus. So in other words, you have people. You have the Pharisees, who were the religious elite of the day. And now you have this upper crust, political class bunch of folks coming together for the sole purpose of killing Jesus. Anyways, verse 7. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed him. Once again, we see Jesus retreating away when the crowds got too big. This time, instead of heading to the wilderness of Judea, which he went to the last couple times, he took his disciples to the lake, which is also known as the Sea of Galilee. Of course, we live pretty close to Sebago Lake, so as I read this text, I just picture Jesus hanging out with the disciples by the lake, Sebago Lake. I love this verse, actually. I love it. Jesus is giving us this neat example of how we can experience God in nature. God in nature. Sometimes you just have to go to the beach to be able to hear God speak to you. Or whatever. Go to the mountains. Go in the trees. Wherever you, the forest, wherever. Sometimes it's, you just need to disconnect from the everyday world and go and hang out on the beach. Go to the lake. Go to the ocean. I don't know about you, but I've been in many places. I've traveled all over and seen a whole bunch of different places. And some of the most breathtaking, you know, places I've ever been. I get there and see the beauty. I see the, you know, the majesty of creation. My first thought is towards God. Oh, God, wow, this, you know, this place you created is so beautiful. And so I see Jesus here. He takes his disciples, and he just goes to the lake. He says, guys, we just need to go. We need to go to the lake. We need to just be quiet and go to the beach. Obviously, Jesus didn't live in Maine in January or February. Verse 8, when they heard about all he was doing, many people came to him from Judea, Jerusalem, Idumeum, which is and regions across the Jordan and around Tyre and Sidon. This verse speaks to how popular Jesus was during this time. People traveled on foot or by horse or by camel 40 miles one way just to hear him teach and preach. I've been to almost all these places mentioned here in the text. It's about a 40-mile travel, 40-mile journey. And people walked or rode a horse or rode a camel one way, 40 miles, to hear Jesus. He's pretty popular. No doubt the most popular spiritual teacher of the day. Verses 9 and 10, because of the crowds, he told his disciples to have a small boat ready for him, to keep the people from crowding him. For he had healed many, so that those with diseases were pushing forward to touch him. So Jesus is taking he takes a walk to the lake with his disciples, and the crowds, they show up, and it gets so crowded that Jesus actually has to get into a boat so that he isn't overwhelmed by the crowd. In my mind, just because of the way my mind works, I see him in a bass fishing boat, not a big, just a little deep, it's a shallow boat, maybe it's bass fishing, and he's on the lake, and they push out from the shore so that the crowds can be on the beach, and he would teach them from the boat. Verses 11 and 12, whenever the impure spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." But he gave them strict orders not to tell others about him. Once again, we see Jesus having authority over impure spirits, and them recognizing his true identity as the Son of God. Why did Jesus, why did Jesus always give strict orders to these impure spirits to be quiet? And as I began to do my study and look at all these different commentaries and scholars, one person said this, and I think they're probably right. The reason that Jesus told all these impure spirits to be quiet was because it wasn't time for Jesus' true identity to be revealed. And certainly, demons or impure spirits weren't the proper channel for such disclosure. Verse 13, Jesus went up on a mountainside and called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. So Jesus was by the lake, now he's out by the he takes his disciples and they go up on a mountainside. I've also been where this text happened. Jesus couldn't get away from the crowds in the wilderness. If you remember our studies from the last couple of weeks, he would go to the wilderness, the deserts of Judea, and to pray, to be alone with his disciples, to talk to God, and the crowds would show up. And so this time, we just read, he said, all right, I'm going to go to the lake. So him and his disciples went to the lake. Guess what? The crowds show up again. So this time he says, all right, boys, all right, guys, we're going to the mountainside. We're going up on the mountain. So he calls his disciples, up on the mountainside for a private meeting. This is kind of like a board meeting for those who have a business background. You know, Jesus, CEO, and he's calling the board members for a meeting. Verses 14 to 15. He appointed 12 that they might be with him, and that they might send that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. So out of the group of the regular followers of Jesus, he selects 12 people to kind of form his inner circle of followers. He gives them authority to preach, and he gives them authority over impure spirits, over the works of the evil one. Jesus, being the greatest leader of all time, knew that he couldn't do everything himself. So he chose 12 disciples to train them to do the work that he was doing. This is the lesson we can all learn. We all can't do everything. I can't do everything. You can't do everything. I once told my wife that. She said I was wrong. Even Jesus couldn't do everything. He had these 12, we call them the apostles. He had these 12 men, these 12 people that he could train and to teach to do the work of the ministry. Verses in closing, verses 16 through 19. These are the 12 he appointed. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter. James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. To them he gave the names Sons of Thunder. Sounds like a biker gang. Anyways. Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These are the men that the Christian church calls the apostles. These are the apostles. These are the men who are chosen by Jesus to be the special carriers of Jesus' message, the gospel. They were the chosen ones of Jesus to help him while he was on the earth. There was one more apostle, really two more apostles in the book of Acts. We find after Judas kills himself, there's a new apostle brother by the name of Matthias. And then, of course, St. Paul is recognized as an apostle as well. So there's technically 14. Without going really into too far details, because I could easily lecture for another 2 or 3 hours on these men for the sake of time, let me tell you this. 5 of these men were fishermen. 5. I think sometimes when Jesus would often go to the lake, I think that's because he knew that they're, you know, that's what the fishermen knew. His disciples knew, you know, the Sea of Galilee. One was a tax collector. We learned about him. Levi, also called Matthew. He was a tax collector. He was like an IRS agent. He was not liked by anyone. The Romans hated him. The Jews hated him. No one in society liked him. He was a thief. He was just not a good person until Jesus called him. One was a political zealot who would probably be described as a terrorist in modern day. That is Simon the Zealot. Jesus called him to be a disciple. He was a political zealot. He wanted to just kill all the Romans that he could. He was against Rome. He hated the Caesar. He hated the emperor. And he was a political zealot. He was out to get rid of Rome. And of course, there was Judas Iscariot. We know him. Judas was a thief. He would often steal from Jesus' treasury box or bag or however they did the accounting then, but he would steal from Jesus. And the rest of the men that are listed there, there's not much known about them, their background at least. But let me tell you this: every one of these men, except 2, were martyred for their faith in Jesus Christ. Saint Matthew, as the story goes, or Levi, whatever you want to call him, he actually ended up in India, of all places, where he had his arms and legs ripped off. St. Mark, He ended up in Egypt, just to, where he, I believe he had, and he was, they took spears and they just made him like Swiss cheese. And you can read all about the martyrs, all about the apostles. The only one that lived church history tells us that St. John lived into his late 90s. So, Nancy, you're right up there with St. John. Congratulations. The Romans tried to kill him twice. One time they put him in a vat of boiling oil, as the story goes. And the story says he took it like a bath. He sat there and he sat in it, and it was like a bath, and he got out of it unharmed. And of course they left him on the island of Patmos one time to be eaten by wild animals, and that didn't work out well either. And so he died in his late 90s in Ephesus, probably in Ephesus. And so, but all the other apostles were martyred for their faith in Jesus Christ. One last thought on these apostles in closing this morning. Jesus didn't choose these 12 to be his apostles, his associates, his companions, because these men had great faith. When in fact, in the Gospels, we read on more than one occasion that Jesus actually had to chastise them for their lack of faith. Oh, ye of little faith, as the old King James Version says. He would say that. He said that more than once to the apostles. Jesus didn't choose these 12 because they had special leadership skills or gifts. These men, by and large, were ordinary people. Most of them were blue-collar workers, nothing too fancy. The point is this: Jesus gladly uses ordinary people for the promotion of his glory and the gospel. That's good news to all of us. Jesus works through ordinary people. That's your thought of the week. If you don't remember anything else, remember that. Jesus works through ordinary people. And of course, when Jesus works through ordinary people, like you and me, it makes them extraordinary people. But that's a whole other subject. Amen. Oh, yes.